seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
And you're very welcome along to Golf Weekly. No Nathan Murphy this week. No Fionn Davenport. They are both skiving. But Peter Lawrie has made the trek in to join me. It's just us two.
Just us two, Joe. Yeah. Dragged in, I was. But delighted to be here.
Good, yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you added that part.
No, delighted to be here.
This is what I dreamt about. Me and you holding fort in golf. The two golfers in the group talking golf.
And getting the other two who don't play golf out the door.
Exactly. So Nathan is going down to Limerick to do a road show. It's a Thursday. Thursdays are his nights. So he's gone down to do Ronan O'Gara.
Is he getting a little sneaky game of golf in a Adair manner?
I don't think so. It's all business. And Brian O'Driscoll and Keith Wood, which sounds like kind of funny.
Bit of fun, yeah.
University Limerick, the concert hall there.
Wow.
It's meant to be very nice. Haven't had the pleasure. And Fionn is at a conference. So I guess, I mean, as much as anything, this will be Ryder Cup review part two because it's still the most interesting thing going on in golf. There are a few tweets in. Fergal Noonan had a strange dream last night. I was playing in a four ball with Nathan Murphy at Molloy Joe and none other than Graeme Souness, with cameo appearances from Phil Mickelson, Jose Mourinho, to add to the drama. Clear sign I'm listening to too many Golf Weekly and Add Off the Ball podcasts. It's quite the dream.
Wow.
How did I play is my only question.
And I didn't even get a mention.
You didn't even get a mention?
I must have been caddying.
Were me and Phil friends in your dream, Fergal? That's what I want to know, really.
Okay.
Hope we were. Hope Phil found me fascinating. Sean Clancy, great pod late last week, lads. I was pleased to hear Padraig come straight out and say he'd like the job in 2020. And of course, he's already thought about green speeds at Whistling Straits, which he had. And Mitchell Pearce said that rotating national anthems instead of Ode to Joy was a great shout.
Right.
We just felt, having been at the opening ceremony, for the first time, that Ode to Joy didn't quite have the impact we might have hoped for at the European anthem.
No.
And maybe we should just rotate anthems.
That's not a bad idea.
La Marseillaise blasting out would be
great,
wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The Italian anthem. Oof. Imagine Molinari leading us all in the Italian anthem. My God, that'd be fantastic. Aaron Levine.
Okay.
Here and there.
Yeah.
All eyes on Rory.
Does he know the words?
Poor Rory. I'd say he wouldn't be fond of that idea. So Richard Clune then, if Padraig Carrington is captain in America because of his US profile, who captains the team in 2024? So when they're back in the States again, he wonders, would G-Mac fit the bill? The word seems to be that in 2024, it'll be Phil at Bethpage against Sergio. That's the dream combo.
Really? Okay.
Now, I don't know, is that too soon for Sergio? That's only 6 years' time. He'd be getting on a bit.
Might be just right, but it could be, you know, it could be a good shout, Graham McDowell. But
will McDowell get it, do you think?
You don't know, really. You know, there's been a lot of Irish guys now getting the Ryder Cup captaincy. They're going to have to move it around a little bit.
Because on paper, a US Open winner, great US profile, you know, Celtic Manor, great Ryder Cup record, and a good people person as well.
Yeah, and he's very good profile in America as well. You know what I mean? He's based himself there for a long, long time. He has his restaurants in Lake Nona. So, he could be a perfect fit.
It's just cluttered, isn't it? Like, it's stiff competition.
It is.
I mean, 15 years ago, a player with that record, they pick whenever they want to take the captaincy. I mean, it would be fantastic. Like a US Open winner, major winner, and the US profile. But now it's very wedged.
Sometimes not, though. Like, there was Sandy Lyle, went through his whole career, never was Ryder Cup captain.
Yeah. Is it a scandal, really, that Christy Senior was never given it?
I would have said so, yeah.
Like, he was the record appearance holder until Faldo came along.
Yeah.
55 through to 71 or two.
But again, we have to remember the European Tour is not really Europe. It is and it isn't. But it's very much based around a Wentworth thing. And if you fit into that profile in Wentworth, then you're away. But if you don't fit into that profile, it's very difficult to get yourself in the door.
Yeah. I would have thought Peter Alice would have fitted in. He never got it either.
Was he not a little bit more controversial than most?
He was liked, maybe. Hey, mention a Christy Senior. brief tangent. We did a special and then we played it out a few weeks ago. And when we were playing down in Carlow at Damien McGrain's place, happened to mention in passing, because I was saying, oh, we've got this Christie piece, we're going to put it out in the next few weeks. And you were saying that actually you got a few lessons off Christie.
Yes, I've had a bit of, as a young boy growing up, I would have been out in Royal Dublin quite a bit. And Christie used to be there and he used to give you a few tips. And I used to go to lessons pretty much across the road to his friend, Paddy Skerritt. Paddy Skerritt and Christie were very close. And Paddy used to give me a few lessons as well. Pointers, you know. Okay. These guys were very much, they were feel players. So they'd try and get you to feel the movement rather than to show you the movement. Christie and Paddy were, you know, very low ball flighters, beautiful strikers of a golf ball. Mm. And really that's why I kind of went out there to try and learn from these guys. You know, they were Irish superstars. Paddy
never
wasn't
heard of Paddy Skerritt, really.
Yeah, fabulous golfer.
He was a professional player.
Professional
like Christie,
player, but stayed at home, you know what I mean? Was a home bird.
Yeah.
Didn't, you know, people say he possibly could have been as good as Christie. But Christie, you know, he had wonderful hands and, you know, he was able to get the ball around the golf course very well.
So was it a fairly casual thing with Christie? It was more Paddy you were going to?
Yes, yeah, it was casual with Christie. And, you know, Christie didn't take fools lightly, you know what I mean?
On the podcast,
yeah, he'd give you a smack in the head if you didn't do something right. Now, it was a joyful thing, but you know he was serious. Like, there was no messing. You did what Christie told you and that was it.
And what age were you when this was happening?
Oh, I was probably 16, 17, okay. 18 years of age.
Were you a big prospect at that age?
No, not really. I was a late developer, I would have said.
Okay.
The way I struck the ball was always quite, you know, it was a bit of a hook and it was low and it was chasey and I was underdeveloped as a, you know, I didn't grow up, I was skinny, I was lanky, I was, you know, I wasn't very strong. But these guys were able to show me how to hit a golf ball.
And were you going to them with the ambition of having a career in golf?
Oh, I always wanted a career in golf. Okay. Always, yeah. When I went to school, I used to said to my classmates, and they'd laugh at me, you know, this my left hand was worth $2 million and my right hand was worth $3 million. Because Christie and Paddy were very much right-handed golfers. They were very right-sided through the ball. Everything was controlled through your right side. Hogan was very similar.
Yeah, Hogan said if he had 3 right hands, he'd prefer that.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So when you are in the middle of a golf swing or when you're thinking about the club face, you're thinking about it through your right hand?
Now, probably I was being coached at the latter stage of my career out of that. But
when you were going to the likes of Paddy and Christie?
Exactly, it was very right-sided. And to be honest with you, when I haven't played that much now and when I go back to hitting a few balls, everything feels more comfortable when it's more right-sided.
Okay.
That's why I always said golf and tennis are very close together.
Because, you know, I played tennis to a reasonable level growing up. I didn't play any golf, to my eternal regret, bar pitch and putt whenever the Open was on for a few days around it. But I played a lot of tennis and it was decent. And I've often thought, I wonder, can I shortcut my golf swing by just reverting to my tennis swing and feeling the hand?
100%, yeah. 100%. Because the movement is the same. Like in a tennis shot, you have to step back.
Yeah.
So you're transferring your weight onto your right foot. And, you know, you're hitting the shot as hard as you possibly can when you transfer your weight onto your left side. Mm. And everything comes with you then.
So that feeling of that, putting a topspin on the forehand and rolling the hands over, that's
golf.
That's their golf release.
Yeah.
And is that what you would think?
That was old school, right? Yeah. That was old school how to teach.
Because now it's like, oh, that you take your hands out of it is the advice.
Depending on who you're teaching. Okay, and how consistent you want to be. I would have said the old style of playing golf was a very consistent of striking the ball. You put a certain curve, you always put a draw on it. Like if you go to a lot of high handicap golfers, you would love to teach them, you know, to go back and teach them a couple of years ago how to get their right side into it, rather than having this horrible cut that goes nowhere. Mm. You know, you have to remember old style golf courses were firm and fast and you used to have to draw the ball to get a bit of length on it.
Mm.
And that's the way I believe golf should be played.
Because when we were doing the special, Christie's son, Christie Jr. was there and he was saying that Christie Sr.'s big point at the top of the swing was to start it by pulling down the left side as well. Did he say that much to you?
To be honest with you, I can't remember, Joe. It was more a case of, it was showing
your
me how to
do it. Slap in the head.
Exactly, yeah. That's but he was a tough man, and he taught you to be tough, you know.
Mm. But then so the right-hand side and getting the right hand over, you can be a bit flicky, can you then? Like, is there a danger?
No, you're not trying to be flicky at all.
Okay.
You know, you're trying to use your right side, not just your right arm, you know, right hand or wrist, you know what I mean? It's a complete right-sided shot.
So you're not just thinking about the right hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're thinking of your right side.
Yeah.
So everything comes through together. You know, and at that last minute, you're putting extra pressure then onto it.
Mm. And would you turn the hand over as much as you could?
No.
Because you'd hook the ball then?
Yeah. Okay. But well, if you go back and look at Seve's videos, right? I saw one actually the other day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was very much, you know, he'd release through the ball. You know, he was releasing his right hand through it.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to hold it off.
Yeah. I've always found that very confusing about golf. The modern day argument is, hold the club off a la, say, Dustin Johnson with his wedges as an extreme example.
Yeah.
And the logic there makes more sense to me. The logic being the club face is squarer for longer.
But this was my point when I was saying to you about who you're teaching, right? You have to remember these guys are looking for absolute accuracy, you know, 100% of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and we're looking at, it's not feet they're looking at accuracy, they're looking at inches, you know. Well, your average club golfer, you know, if they can get to single figures, they've done exceptionally well.
Sure.
And I would think a lot of people listening today, you know, their dream is to get to single figures.
Yeah, the vast 90% of people listening now are dreaming of that, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's go and try and teach them a way that they can fall into on a Saturday and Sunday morning. Mm. That's not too complicated.
Yeah.
Because being complicated, you know, it just leads to disasters.
Exactly. And we don't have the time to practice during the week.
Correct.
So what we need is an 8 out of 10 swing. We don't need to aspire for perfection, but we need a swing that we can go out that's 6 or 7, 8 out of 10, but is consistently 6 or 7, 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
What we all hate playing is when we go out and have a bad day.
Yeah.
Because you've invariably, actually, any time I've played with you, I don't know, is it like the pressure? I have a bad day. And so a 12...
It's that effect I have on people.
Honestly, you know, I think I'm just more conscious when I'm with a really good player. But a 12 handicapper or a 15 handicapper having a bad day is really bad. It's miserable. What we're all looking for is to eliminate the really bad days. And so therefore, I would have thought the more consistent swing is holding the club off with a square club face. Whereas by contrast, say that kind of rolling the hands over...
Yeah.
Releasing. The point is often made about that, well, as you're rotating from open to close through the ball, the club face is only square for what feels like a millisecond.
Yeah.
And so that seems to me like the more risky version.
No, but I'm not saying about rolling the club over. I'm saying being more right-sided. Okay? Right-sided is coming through square, 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 and you've released it. You know?
So you're not doing it with your... You're not flicking over your hands.
No. It's no flick over of your hands.
Okay.
No.
Maybe that's where I'm going wrong.
Exactly, yeah. So you don't flick over a tennis racket, you know,
well,
unless you're putting a very hard topspin.
Yeah,
but if you're just not hitting a topspin, what do? You hold it square.
Yeah, it's a bit of a release as you come through, I suppose.
And that's what you want.
But you're not manipulating your hand at all.
No. So the putting stroke's very similar to it, you know what I mean? It's a fraction open to square to closed.
Yeah.
You know?
So as you're about to make impact with the ball, you're not thinking ever, I'm going to turn my right hand over here quickly.
Unless you were trying to play a specific shot.
Okay. So do you recommend people, what do you recommend people feel with their left side? Will people naturally have a left side or a right side preference? It's like what foot do you jump off kind of thing? Or
okay. 90% of the people that are listening to this podcast, right, will slice the ball, okay, in some shape or form. They'll fade it, they'll slice it, right? If I was to say to those 90% of the people, go hit golf balls, right, with the ball above your feet. Okay, so when you're out hitting a few shots, right, put the ball on a hill, the ball's above you, and keep on hitting shots, right? So it gets you more rounded, okay, and it makes you go back and through the shot.
Yeah.
Okay, you can't hold it,
yeah.
You have to let it go,
yeah.
Right? And the majority of the guys, and ladies, of course, that we want to know that, we have to let them do that. So 90% of you, put the ball above your feet and swing at it.
And that'll teach you the right
plane. And if you want to hit a practice, if you're going on the tee, practice swing, right? Practice swing like a baseball, okay? Like you're trying to hit a baseball or a tennis shot, okay? Even one-handed, right? With your right hand, of course. That kind of feeling, a ball above your feet, so you're rounded and not up and down.
Yeah. When we played in Carlow, you put on an exhibition of driving, I would have said. I'm sure not by your lofty standards. Of course, you've driven the ball better in your life, but by any normal standards, it was like an exhibition of driving. And even you admitted I'm driving the ball well.
Yeah.
90% of us out there, as well as slicing, just can't get any real consistency with our driver. It can go anywhere.
That's because they're thinking too much about it. They're not actually thinking a few basic points, right? So you go back to probably the best driver the ball was.
Greg Norman.
Greg Norman, exactly, right? And he thought of a couple of certain little...
I'm so pleased I got that right.
So am I, actually, because I thought you were going to come out with some...
Tiger Woods!
Yeah.
Phil?
Other beauty. You know, his whole model was, he stood up very much to it. He hit it as hard as he could. But also, he had a point that he picked.
So maybe, already we're dead. Hitting it as hard as we can. I'm dead if I do that. We're all dead.
No, we're not.
We're not coordinated
you're
enough.
Not.
We're all over the shop.
You're not.
Okay.
Okay. So let's go back to there. Because if you don't swing at it, right, amateurs in general think too much. Okay? So they're actually thinking about what to do on the downswing. Clubhead is going too fast to think about it. Mm. It's impossible. Mm. So the quicker you swing the clubhead, the better. Because you have less chance to think about it.
Do we not just spin out then? That's what we all
do,
don't we?
No, not if you're right-sided, you won't spin out of it. Okay? So this whole thing is right-sided.
Okay. So you're talking feet, legs, hip.
Right side, everything coming through the shot. So pick your point right in front of you.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm going to hit it over that point no matter what happens. Right? I'm not going to worry about what's 200 yards down the fairway. I'm not going to worry about the water on the left or the water on the right. Because majority of your faders will think what's out the right-hand side.
Yeah.
It gets a bit easier. And if you're really struggling, okay?
Yes.
If you're really
talking.
If you're really struggling.
Yeah, we're on the sixth. We've sliced every drive so far.
Right. So we're going to go right-sided, aren't we? We're thinking about that. We're thinking about where we're going to try and hit it.
Is there a particular part of your right side you think about getting through to?
No, just think of a tennis. Think about playing tennis.
Okay.
It's the same thing. You don't think about a particular side, do you?
Someone told me shoulder recently, get the right shoulder through. Don't like that.
No. If you want to think of anything about shoulders, is put your left shoulder under your chin when you take the club back.
Yeah.
Right? But that's the only thing I would think of shoulders.
Okay.
The big part of it is go down the shaft a fraction. Okay?
Yeah.
Just a little bit with the driver.
Yeah.
And hit it.
I noticed Ricky Fowler's clubs at the Ryder Cup. Obviously, he's a small man.
Yeah, or tiny.
They're children's clubs.
Yeah.
I even thought, I'm getting his size driver. I'm getting a 30-inch driver.
Do you know Paul McGinley played his best years with a very short driver?
I'd believe it.
And he was an exceptionally good driver of the ball.
Would you recommend amateurs get shorter drivers? I am coming around to that opinion.
But look.
We need to make the game as easy as possible.
No, in general, right, amateurs think, I'm going to go to McGurk's, wonderful place, McGurk's. Buy a new driver, okay? Mm-hmm. And they'll spend 400, 500 quid on a new driver, right? Which actually doesn't fit them. So the first thing I would say is go get fitted.
Yeah, sure.
You know? And then the second is, yes, go a little bit shorter. Because if you think about it, a lot of the guys who play golf and ladies there, if they use a 3-wood, they're a little bit more accurate with a 3-wood. And why is that? A little bit more loft on the club and the club's shorter.
Yeah.
So go for the driver, go for the fraction shorter, maybe put a 3-wood shaft in it and see what happens. Mm. You don't lose that much length.
No, I don't think you do.
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
I tell you what we'll do. We'll do in maybe a month, let people get loads of questions in and we'll just do a full-on nerd.
I think we should do,
golf questions.
Throw in a few videos and then we can analyse a few swings.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Okay, do you want to start sending some videos then? We can do that in a show now and we can put it up on YouTube and you can point out some stuff, which would be interesting. Here's one last one for you then. And this is entirely personal, so this is kind of a deeply unfair thing to do and a misuse of everybody's time. But I have noticed I play by far my best golf when I stand with my feet more so than my hips and shoulders, feet in a closed stance. So my right foot tucked behind. And it feels much better. I feel like I have way more room on the backswing. when I standing in a closed stance gives me a much more solid left side to hit into.
Yes.
And I feel like I'm, it's a better
hitting
connection.
Against something.
I'm hitting against my left side and then almost going around it as well.
Okay.
But that left leg is staying fairly
solid.
Strong and solid.
Yeah.
And I don't get that feeling when I'm in a neutral position. I find I can just jump out of it a bit more. Does that make sense? Is that possible?
It does. Yeah, what I would have said, and one of the instructions that I got from Brendan McDade, was my coach for my whole career, was we used to hit an awful lot of shots with literally my right foot back as far as it would go.
Right.
So like you said there, was you're pretty much setting the backswing where you are, and then you're actually hitting against something that's firm, which is your left side.
Mm.
You know, you're not sliding out of it.
That's
you're actually
do, yeah.
hitting against something.
I
yeah.
go all Elvis legs and slide
well,
everything.
Yeah, you don't need to slide.
Okay.
So again.
So you don't have any issue with me standing closed all over a golf course?
No.
Grant?
None at all.
Okay.
Do you know, I played a tournament, and people are going to be very either amazed by this, but we worked on a thing with Brendan where I took the club back and I actually stopped at the top of my backswing because of what you were saying there with my driver. I was in a bad position. So I'd actually take the club back, stop, and hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'd stop for a second and hit it, but it was very noticeable. I played the Singapore Open, I finished top 10, and I stopped on every tee shot.
Wow. Hideki Matsuyama style.
And I hit it further then that week than I ever did before.
And did you keep doing it that way?
No.
Why not?
I don't know.
Jesus. Honest to God.
Yeah. But you get it, you get these things into your head.
Yeah, sure.
Right? And they work for a week.
I know.
And then
I know, they just disappear.
No.
God, it's an endlessly annoying game, but brilliant for it.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Brief tangent over. Yeah, but sorry, in short, Christy O'Connor. Yeah, that's the other thing. I never got to see his ball flight because obviously there's no pro tracer and the video footage is so old. The swing looks like, you know, it's so smooth.
Well, all the old ball flights were, they all took off like an aeroplane.
Low.
Right? Really low, and then they started to rise.
Was that the ball or was that the way they were hitting it?
It was both.
Okay.
It was both.
Okay. You don't see that much now, do you?
No, because the whole game now is and to get the length that they talk about, everything has to be up in the air.
Yeah.
But I never saw golf like that at all. I always saw golf with the ball quite low because I grew up on links golf courses and I grew up controlling the flight of my ball.
Mm.
But if you have an American coming over here, the first thing he's going to do is he's hitting the ball up in the air. And there's a couple of reasons, because when you play in a warm climate, you know, There's nothing to stop the ball, so you're better off hitting it up in the air.
Further. Yeah.
Exactly.
So you'd be a big believer then that climates would shape golf swings.
Very much so.
Swing in a
yeah.
certain way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, what's an Irish swing then?
Well, look, you know, it's hard to explain what an Irish swing is because all the young lads coming up now are all, you know, very good, and they all disappear to, you know, America on scholarships, or they travel the world playing in different climates. So there's no real Irish swing.
But back in the day,
you would have always seen a very low ball flight.
Yeah.
You know, look at Walton. Walton always hit it, you know, really low and penetrating flight.
Yeah.
You know, the Darce the same. Des Smith.
What was Darren Clark like?
Darren Clark was a little bit higher because he spent a good bit of time away from Ireland.
Okay. Rory McIlroy is a complete freak to have grown up in Ireland with that golf swing, isn't he?
Yeah, there again, though, he didn't spend a lot of time in Ireland. So, you know what I mean? He went pretty much around the world as a junior playing pretty much everything, you know, he could play in.
No, but he's shooting a 61 in Portrush as a 16-year-old. So, I mean, he's experiencing lots of wind and...
Yeah.
Rain and cold on the driving ranges.
Yeah, but he didn't like hitting it low at all. He liked hitting it high.
Mm.
And that's why he's a superstar.
And so, like, do the Californians bomb it up high? And
yes. Yeah.
South Africans?
South Africans very high as well.
Are they?
Yeah.
Australians?
Australians, no, more because they play a lot of links golf. They're more a little bit lower to the ground.
Okay. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. All the Asian golfers are all up in the air.
Okay. Anyway. I'll move on. John Bailey last week said, great stuff, lads. In fairness to Phil, we were making the point that he didn't play in the he played in the foursomes, which just made no sense. He can't play early morning golf in Europe as he'd need more clothes than the Michelin man with his arthritis, so that ruled him out of the four balls. You would imagine they consider this. If it was back at Gleneagles 4 years ago, I would totally take that point, but I can't tell you how warm it was in France. It was over 20 degrees first thing in the morning. It was t-shirt, like it was too hot, it was t-shirt weather. I was there in the first tee, I was in a t-shirt.
Right.
Blasted down. So the heat and the arthritis wasn't an issue.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
They all looked very unhappy though, didn't they? Tiger looked exceptionally unhappy all week.
We are going to get into that now. They are your tweets. We're talking Ryder Cup. Tiger looked exceptionally unhappy. Yeah. Tired. 7 weeks and nine.
Yeah. He just looked worn out.
Yeah.
He looked like an old man trying to play golf. You know what I mean? Who had played the last 5 days out of six.
He didn't want to be there.
No.
And he couldn't have legislated for what was going to happen at the Tour Championship or how it was going to all culminate.
Yeah.
Could not have been the plan. And he had to ride that momentum while it was happening in the FedEx playoffs. And suddenly, he's on a flight to Paris on a Monday morning. Time difference, jet lag, up early.
Not in his own plane either.
Wrecked, yeah, with the lads. I mean, I'd say he was thinking, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Yeah. And earning nothing from it.
Yeah. So he basically admitted in the press conference at the very end, yeah, I'm pretty shattered. Now, he couldn't say that during the week because you're not going to say that to your opponent.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was destroyed. The one criticism I would have, and Paul McGinley made a point of this on the Friday or Saturday, was, fair enough, you don't have your best stuff. And internally, you might be feeling tired. And maybe a few of you are. But he said the body language was really poor. Like it was an extra little bit of mojo.
Oh, the body language was horrendous.
The lads, for Mollywood playing against them. Seeing Tiger Woods crumple over and shoulder slump.
Yeah.
Like if that was the body language of the lads you're playing against, there's an extra pep in your step.
Of course there is. You're going to take this guy in early.
I was kind of shocked that, so Furyk's playing a lot of Ryder Cups and Phil and Tiger, that their body language was so poor. Like in all the pointless meetings that you have, because it's effectively still an individual sport.
Yeah.
One of the things you could all agree on is, do you know what guys, actually, let's make sure the body language is really good. Let's show the crowd they're not getting to us. Let's shoulders back and strut our stuff. Whereas they crumpled from the Friday afternoon on from a body language point of view.
Yeah. I would totally agree with you. You know, their body language was shocking. Some of the decisions that Furyk made were they're hard to believe, to be honest with you.
What ones jumped out? Phil and Foursomes.
Well, Phil and Foursomes was one in particular.
Very bad.
And then just a couple of other things. Like, they talked about the golf course, right, being exceptionally difficult. But that's Paris National. It's not as if it was just built yesterday. You know, I've played it in probably, 10 French Opens before. That was the golf course. So surely they've done some recce of the golf course and how to play it.
They did.
Well, they didn't do very well at it, I have to admit.
No, they didn't.
Because they weren't ready for the golf course. They didn't see, you know, certain places to hit it, certain places not to hit it, certain clubs off the tees. You know, it just didn't make any sense.
Yeah. Have you a good answer for the question that I still haven't got a good answer for, is that they were missing fairways with hybrids and irons.
Mm.
It's not like they were just idiotic and hit driver in every hole. They didn't.
Right.
They tried to play the course and were still missing fairways.
Look, the fairways are very tight.
Yeah.
You know, it's as simple as that. The fairways are very tight. It's a very visually daunting golf course.
Do you think it's true that the Europeans are better ball strikers when it comes to accuracy?
No, they're better. They're more used to that style of golf course, you know.
So it messes less with their head on the tee.
Exactly, yeah. An example is when you go to Italy or Spain and you're driving down through very small, narrow roads and you see a guy flying past you. They're used to driving on real narrow roads. You know, we mightn't be.
Mm.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so we see... There's a couple of holes there. In particular, 17 is exceptionally tight.
I honestly, I just can't explain to people. 17 is nuts. It's so long.
Mm.
We walked by first. I said to Nathan, is that a par 5? You know, we had a look. It's par 4. I mean, it is long. It's like us amateurs, we'd be hitting 3 wood into the green. However good a player you are, I guarantee you we would. And I mean, it's like single file fairway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's a frightening
hole.
But
you don't miss it left. You cannot miss it left.
But I have sympathy for anyone who hits driver there and just misses the fairway. That's
not a bad shot. No, but you're dead. You don't get on the green in two.
Did you think that was too penal? Like Phil Mickelson?
No, that was worse. It was worse than the French Open. If you hit it down the left-hand side of the French Open, you lose your golf ball.
Would you really?
Yeah.
It's worse at the French Open.
Worse.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because Phil Mickelson kind of made a point that I have some sympathy for, right? Some sympathy for, where he kind of said this week back in America, when he, and by the way, he played very well last week, which I just couldn't believe based on what I saw at the driving range. But he says, like, I'm not sure I've got much time for that type of golf, whereby you shouldn't be out of the hole, basically, from missing the fairway on a hole that long, 10 or 15 yards into the rough, 10 yards. It's too punitive. Why not give people a good chance to get out of that rough? Why not give them a chance to get on the green and stay in the hole? Do we want golf where you're having to hack out, effectively gouge out from that kind of rough and you're out of the hole?
But that was US Open style for many, many years.
Yeah.
And that's the way they did it. Europe have been playing in those type of golf courses for many years.
So you don't think it's too penal? You don't think it makes for a bad spectacle?
Depending on what you want. You know, if you want the best player to come out of it and he's going to shoot 5 under for the tournament, then that's the way you set up a golf course.
You could argue the best players didn't come out of it here, given that the US team, are what, their average ranking was 11, the average ranking in the European team was 18. I think the Americans are gone home and they feel a bit duped by that course. I think they feel that was tricked up.
Yes, yeah, I agree with you there. I came into this, did the Ryder Cup, and I lost a fortune on bets with different people. And I said it here, you can play it back. I thought America would whip them because they were so strong. They looked like they were together going into it. They looked like they were a unit.
Yeah.
And it all just proved all wrong.
What surprised you about their play?
What surprised me straight away, I thought they played lovely in the four balls early on. Mm. You know, they got into it. They seemed to be together.
That, by the way, because I know you weren't there, that was the only session where there was effectively no wind. And honestly, in the afternoon, the wind was really significant. Yeah. It was a stiff breeze.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's the only reason, but that's...
Ah, but look, they're used to playing in the wind.
Yeah, sorry, they're the best players in the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. If they can't control the golf ball, you know, in the wind, then... But
so they played lovely that morning.
That foursomes pairings, as far as I was concerned, killed them off. It just killed them off. I couldn't understand that the pairings that they put out certainly wouldn't have been the pairings that I would have put out for them. Mm. But it just put them into a terrible frame of mind. And then after that, it was just straight downhill and they had no chance.
It's tough to get back the mojo and the momentum after 4-0 for the next morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with you. That foursome's 4-0. That'll be the one that'll haunt them.
Yeah, exactly. And that changed everything.
Yeah.
You know, it really did. It changed the whole lot. And, you know, Jim Furyk has to go back and that's where he made a mistake. And there was really there was coming back from it. But they were what, 5-3 down?
Mm.
That's no... You know, no disaster really.
No.
But
then they crashed in the next morning.
Yeah.
I think it was 8-4 or something going into
the
evening session. Like, how do you explain Phil, who, by the way, on the range couldn't hit a thing, and even because the range was so small, you could overhear the conversations, so I was right there.
Right.
Phil knew he couldn't hit a thing. Phil said to his coach at one point, we got to start from scratch here. This thing's a mess. He said, you know, I'll talk to you in the morning. And he went back on the Saturday night. So he knew he couldn't hit it straight. So him and DeChambeau and foursomes.
Just horrendous. Yeah. Where did they have the range? The range used to be, you used to get a buggy to the range for a French Open.
Yeah.
It obviously wasn't the same place. They had it down the other golf course.
It was just off the ninth fairway.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a strange range in that they were hitting downhill.
Oh, okay. It was just off the net. It was on the left-hand side. Yeah. So they hit it down the other golf course.
Yeah. So if you come out of that hotel, it's kind of straight ahead of you in the distance. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like you come out, the first tee would be on your right and you kept going.
Okay,
yards. Yeah. It was a lovely setup and it was completely away from all spectators.
Yes.
It's totally private. It was like this serene, calm.
Right.
Fantastic privilege to get to go and stand there and watch them, you know. But the point is they knew Phil was a mess.
Mm.
And they put him out in foursomes.
Yeah, didn't make any sense.
People are saying DeChambeau and Woods didn't make sense. No one was saying that before the Ryder.
I thought DeChambeau and Woods was going to be okay.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Were there any pairings that you thought that's not going to work? Their games don't suit. Like, did Reed and Woods' game suit? Reed?
No.
Why would they not suit each other?
Go back a couple of years, right? Yeah. Did Reed not say he was better than Tiger Woods.
He didn't say that. He said, I sort of see it as it's me and Tiger and then the rest.
Yeah. You know, and did he not wind up Tiger doing something else? No? Was there not some wind up?
He wound up Jordan Spieth over the summer. There was a drop.
No, I'm talking about 3 or 4 years ago. When he originally came out onto the scene.
I don't remember that. I mean, he may well have. It's Patrick Reed.
Right.
I'm sure in his private moments, Tiger looks at Reed wearing the red top and black trousers and thinks,
what are you doing here, mate?
Who the do you think you are?
Yeah.
Seriously, what do you think you're doing? Exactly. I'm sure that crosses his mind.
Yeah.
But Woods would not be forced to play with someone he didn't want to play with either, I don't think. Like, I think Woods was back in the form whereby, once again, it was a legitimate point where you have to say, well, we've got to get someone that works with Woods. Because Woods is going to play in at least 3 of the sessions. So I think Furyk would have said to Tiger, what works for you? You know, I really want to get the best out of you. It's important. So I think that's why it's fair enough that he split up Reed and Spieth. Because it wasn't just a case of, well, I need one good pairing now. There was a way of making 2, and you have to make sure Tiger's in a good pairing.
Why didn't you put him with Mickelson?
He's
his best buddy these days. You know? It would have destroyed their pay-per-view thing that's going to happen, probably the worst idea I've ever seen.
Well, for one, if Tiger saw Phil on the range, he would have said, don't you dare put me near him. And 2, I mean, yeah, they're friends, but yeah. Like, at that golf course, those 2 off the tee?
4-ball. Not foursomes.
Yeah. Maybe.
But I thought they would have led.
Why does Reed and Woods' game not suit? Like, actual games?
I don't think Reed suits with anybody. Well, that's the problem.
He suits with Jordan Spieth. Just Jordan Spieth won't play with him anymore. That's the problem. But you know, like Ben Hogan, when he gave his speech, it was doing the rounds on Twitter a while back, he basically just said to the team, right, I'm going to put all the lads who hit it crooked, you're going to be together. And all the lads who hit it straight, you're going to be together. And then you'll be used to...
It's pretty good logic, isn't it? It'll
be your game.
Yeah.
So you'll be used to hitting it out of the rough and hitting miracle shots, and you'll be used to hitting from a fairway. So that's our team.
Right.
And they went out and trounced the team. So there was a certain simplicity there. Like, you know, with stats and everything now, is it still... That's simplistic. It probably is in some respects. You need people who are straight off the tee with people who are straight off the tee. Zach Johnson.
In foursomes you do, yes.
Yeah, yeah. In foursomes. 4 balls is still just your own ball, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
You can pair anyone in 4 balls.
Yeah. Just get on with it, you know, at least, you know, get them to, you know, that they actually like each other, then they might talk to each other.
Yeah.
But Tiger didn't seem to talk to Reed at all.
Didn't seem to much.
No.
No.
What else? Then the first fairway, put on his jacket and kept on walking.
What else might Furyk have done that wasn't great? So the playing Phil at all was a bad idea, especially in foursomes. That's a big one. Like the Reed thing, I have a certain sympathy for him on Reed.
Yeah.
So were there any other pairings that just looked off?
To be honest with you, I had all my stats done out, you know what I mean, had a look at the team beforehand.
Yeah.
And going back on it, I just can't think off the top of my head what other mistakes he made.
Yeah.
I would have said yes, he made a couple of mistakes here or there, but... look, does it really matter what a captain does? You know, you're having your guys out there who are meant to be the best players in the world to play to 90% of their ability. They didn't even play to 50% of their ability. As far as I'm concerned, America didn't show up. They sent some group of imposters, as far as I was concerned, to take on Europe.
Mm.
They played the golf course very poorly. As you said, their body language was terrible.
Mm.
Europe
played great as well.
And Europe. But they didn't play spectacularly well, did they?
Molinari and Fleetwood certainly did.
But go look back at the scoring. I looked at the scoring on a daily basis and it was like, you know.
Molinari and Fleetwood were like through 14 holes in foursomes on that course.
They were the one group, like, with 3 under or something like that, were they not?
4 under.
4 under? Yeah.
That's serious golf foursomes.
It is, yeah.
Now, McIlroy and Poulter on one of the foursomes. It was foursomes. There was a McIlroy group. It might have been with Poulter. They won their match by only being like level par or 1 under in foursomes. But Molinari and Fleetwood aside, and sorry, Henrik Stenson as well in foursomes is just like 2 points done. Destroy whoever I'm playing in the singles. He's like an Iceman machine.
Yeah.
Love Henrik Stenson. The most underrated player on that whole European team when we're listing off. Like he said, Bjorn said to him at the start of the week, you're in my 2 foursomes teams and in the singles. And he just went out and destroyed everyone. So, like, amazing to have that in your team. But besides those, I don't know who played spectacular. Like, Rory didn't.
No.
Sergio, I guess, played pretty well.
I was very impressed by Sergio. Yeah.
It's a great pick in hindsight. None of us thought that was a good pick.
No, he came out. He's changed his whole year pretty much right there.
Record European points winner.
Yeah. So amazing by Sergio.
Poulter held up his end of the bargain, you'd have to say.
Well, look, he's called the postman, isn't he? And he delivered. And it galls me to say it, I have to admit, because I hate that, you know, that postman part of it.
Yeah.
But he delivered.
So are you kind of saying then Europe didn't play spectacular, but they played very well?
They played well, yeah, but they didn't.
You're only as strong as your weakest link.
Correct.
Who's the weakest player on that European team? No one jumps out.
No, no.
Like even Torbjørn. Torbjørn Olsen was playing really well.
Yeah.
And he
won a singles match, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
yeah, he won it well. John Rambi, Tiger Woods on the Sunday was playing okay. And so that was kind of their weakest link.
Yeah.
It was interesting that Harrington was saying here on the show about Torbjørn and Rory that he actually feels they realised that Rory needs to be on the course with a Poulter, a Sergio, a guy who revs him up, like puts energy into it. They were quite surprised by it. They thought he might respond to leading the rookie.
No.
And he might assume that mantle.
No.
But actually he feeds off the energy created by Sergio or Poulter. And Harrington was saying, that's something that I'll be thinking about in 2020. Mm. So expect to see Rory never again with someone who he needs to carry along.
Maybe Rory should get a caddy like that.
That's an interesting point. Like a fired up Steve Williams type.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point, yeah. Very interesting.
Like rather than...
Harry and JP are low key, aren't they, out there?
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
So any other takeaways then?
Yes. I got hammered on Twitter, by the way, by our lovely Nathan about Jordan Spieth. And I actually didn't respond.
Until
he lost his match.
6-0 in singles.
He
something like that. He,
I got some Twitter posts that Jordan Spieth was average and he was 5-under after 6 holes in the first day.
Yeah.
And he's just playing average and then he lost his match. So I just sort of said, you know, really, that just says it all.
Sorry now. In fairness. He was pretty deadly. And aside from the singles, he won every other match.
Aside from the singles? He got beaten the first day.
Him and Justin Thomas, they were the only ones that held up their end of the bargain. Oh, they were beaten in the foursomes, were they, that evening?
No, beaten in the foursomes the first day.
Okay, because it was 4-0.
Beaten in the four balls or whatever.
Okay. But they won 3 of 4 as a team.
Yeah, look,
they won 3 of 4 as a team.
He's just average.
They won 3 of 4 as a team. And they won foursomes
average.
The next day.
Yeah, whatever.
By the way, I was watching him. He's not average.
Yeah, no, he's not.
He really is not average. I was watching him in the range. I almost am surprised Jordan Spieth can hit the ball because you've damaged him so much in my mind.
Mm.
And on the range, he was fairly impressive.
Okay. I love just winding you guys up.
Ah, dear. You've ruined him for me.
Okay.
I absolutely love him.
Right, tell me this, right?
Ricky Fowler, by the way.
No, tell me this
is
now.
Is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I've come away from a British Open now and now Ryder Cup, and he is just such a ball striker. Now, he couldn't bring it onto the course last weekend for whatever reason.
Right.
But, jeez.
He flushes it, doesn't he? Yeah.
Flush.
Yeah.
Like a notch above everyone.
Mm. So, yourself and Nathan.
Yeah.
Paris.
Was no fun.
First tournament.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
Reminded me of myself and Damien many moons ago. When I saw that Twitter picture of yourself and himself, you're there looking at your phone, not realising that he's taking a picture of you when you're having something to eat.
Incorrect.
Okay.
Incorrect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Incorrect.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am rarely on my phone. I made a big effort not to be. This was the first time we'd sat down in ages. I was just, we had both taken out our phones.
Right.
He was on the phone to someone and I was like, you know what, I'll catch up with people.
Yeah.
I looked up first. There's no food on the table, by the way.
Okay.
I looked up first at him. He then held up his phone in my face as if to take a picture. And I was like, I'm not smiling for this. I'm not indulging this behavior. I don't know what's socially acceptable here, but this is not. And then he clicked the picture.
Yeah.
And I think I said, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
And then he put it up on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you the crowning moment for me and Nathan was on the Sunday.
Right.
I mean, Ryder Cup. Long days.
Oh, I'd imagine
so. Just so early there.
Yeah.
So we didn't leave the media centre until about 10:30 on the Sunday, and then had to send back loads of audio for the TBAM show on the Monday morning. So we're there late, and then we have to go back to the apartment for the Wi-Fi. Long story short, our big night out on the Sunday concluded with not us celebrating with the team at their hotel, but us honestly sitting in our socks in my bedroom, aka the living room, eating. Sharing a KFC chicken bucket as he, like, with his greasy fingers, typed stuff back for us.
the joys of tournament living.
If and you actually, think it's fun, that was it. Like,
there you go. That's what life is
oh
like.
Oh my God! And a 5 or 6 a.m.
flight the next morning.
The next morning in Charles de Gaulle from Versailles. You don't want to do that. So.
No.
But you know what? It was a very enjoyable week.
He's a good lad. Imagine that 30 weeks of the year.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
We were having a conversation. Would you do this? Like if Sky Sports came and said, do you want to do this for 40 weeks of the year or even 30? So I don't think so. I don't think you could do that.
Yeah.
It's really tough. And it's like the media center food all tastes the same. Everything, it smells the same. Peeing in Portaloos. I don't know. In some ways, it'd be tough to turn down, but if you had a family at all.
Ham and cheese baguette.
Oh, like honestly, I put on about 6 pounds over there just in those 3 days, 4 days. Like, in a way, I don't know how you did it. It's not glamorous. Like, it's really tough. It's a real slog. Sitting in airports, you're not eating well. Sleep's all a bit off all the time.
Yeah.
So.
New beds.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, you would have slightly better situation, obviously, given that you'd be on the course or better hotels a lot of the time. And. Mm. You don't have to deal with a lot of the stuff that we're doing. But by the same token, you're also walking 18 holes every day and then stressing about your game. So it's tough in other ways. Like,
I was trying to get your viewpoint of what it was like to be on tour for a week.
Yeah. I've never come back from tournaments I've covered and thought, geez, I'd love to get back out in the road now tomorrow.
Mm.
I've never thought. I've always come back shattered, feeling distinctly unhealthy. And being very, very happy to have home-cooked food and like 2-3 weeks clear before I have to do anything travel-wise. Yeah. So I can see, like, it was World Mental Health Day yesterday. I can see how that would be corrosive for your mental health if you weren't suited to it. Like, it's really tough, you know? And rooming with Damien, like, if me and Nathan had to go back on the road together for the next 30 weeks.
You'd kill each other.
I mean, we wouldn't. You would just, you'd just get to a point where you just would have long silences.
Yeah. But you'd be comfortable in those silences.
To be fair, by the time we got to the KFC Sunday debacle, the only sound in the room was
munching.
Disgusting, greasy munching. And like, I've nothing left to say to you. Me neither. That's fine.
Nathan. Where are you?
That is the glamour of it. I'm sure he has worse things to say about me.
Yeah.
But like, it was fun as well, you know?
Yeah.
We move on. British Masters, we should give a quick mention to. Is there any other points? Like, Thomas Bjorn's a hero now and he's vindicated pretty much every decision he made.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy watching it?
I did.
Yeah. I thought it was a good
event. Well, no, let me get this right. I enjoyed watching the start of it.
First day was unbelievable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. Like, and then
3-1 down to 3-1 up to 3-1 down again.
Yeah.
It's great.
There's a few points I don't like about the Ryder Cup. And you'll probably think, oh, Peter, what are you talking about? Okay. The celebrations after the hell putts. Or the celebrations when things went well for them.
Yeah.
It always gets to me that, you know, we're not in a boxing match here. We're not trying to kill the opponent. We're actually just, you know, it's a game of golf.
Yeah.
And we're trying to, beat our opponent, but beat them in a certain way that is elegant. Go back a couple of years. And I actually watched the highlights there. It was probably just on a small, maybe a YouTube video, of when Nicklaus picked up the ball from Tony Jacklin and went over and shook his hand and said, you know, nobody should have that pressure.
Yeah, but to be fair, by the same token, that's when they were beating the holy Jesus out of Britain and Ireland the whole time.
I know, but has it not just stepped over the line a little bit too much?
I don't think it has. Like... Think of the lads in the war by the shore and their army fatigues.
Oh, that's disgraceful.
This is nothing new. Like,
no, and I know it's nothing new.
Lads' balls bouncing back into the fairway mysteriously, all that stuff. I think it's actually gone back to being very respectful between the players. Like, I think it was worse in the Seve era. I think it was nasty then. I think Seve hated them, and that was how the European team motivated themselves. These lads are all friends. Like on the tee, there was such respect. You don't always see what's going on TV, but like there was lots of good gestures. And think at Medina when Justin Rose holds that big long putt and Phil gives him the thumbs up as if to say, deadly.
Yeah.
That's one of my favourite sports moments of the last 10 years, I think. I do know what you mean. Look, it's a little bit pathetic in a non-contact sport to see Ian Poulter honestly strutting as if he's McGregor. Like I find Poulter a little bit embarrassing as if he's in a physical contest. The other actually small takeaway point, though, is I found being out there in the course that, like, you literally have a few thousand people around the green. They've travelled to be there. they were creating this great atmosphere. And so, like, I remember Fleetwood holding a putt in the ninth on the Saturday and giving a beat. Like, he held the putt. It was a good putt. It was for birdie. They won the hole. Like, the place erupted, you know? Like, thousands of people, a massive roar. And he kind of just gave it the, you know, fist pump. Like, nothing too much, but he just, whoa. And then I went back in and watched it. And honestly, put his half a second fist pump to slow motion and to music and replay it four times from different angles, it looks like he is milking it.
Yeah.
And actually, in real time,
it wasn't that way at all.
And he's like this one small dot in front. Like, so he has to. It's like the difference between film acting and theatre. When you're on stage, your gestures have to be a bit bigger. So he has to give it the big one.
Okay.
A little bit of a fist pump for the people who are like over there to let them know, come on, and thanks for coming and supporting us.
Right.
So then, when you translate that to film, sometimes. Yeah. And slow motion music, it can look a bit indulgent, but I found more so when you were there, none of the celebrations looked nuts, except for Poulter and maybe John Rahm when he beat Tiger.
Yes.
And then almost forgot himself and was like, oh, sorry, Tiger, you're my hero.
Look, I'll go back to Justin Thomas, right? When he was interviewed after he beat Rory in the singles, I thought that was the best moment of the Ryder Cup right there.
Right.
You know, he said it was a great match.
Yeah.
You know, I really wanted to win.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to win like this.
Yeah. You know? I thought it was all played in a really good spirit.
Okay.
Personally.
I see, you were there. Mm. I'm watching it on TV.
I'm still, by the way, watching 98% of it on TV.
But yeah.
I thought on the range, hey guys, how you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
There were hellos. And
okay.
It was not, it never for a moment felt like War by the Shore.
Right.
The Seve era, We Hate You. I thought it was very sportsmanlike, you know.
Okay.
I would have said.
What about Dustin and Brooks?
Well, I saw their video where Brooks got Player of the Year. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson. Wait, the way he turns to the camera at the end, smiling. Honest to God.
I thought it was a you know, one of these comedy sketches when I looked at it first, like as in it wasn't the two lads, you know.
It was meant to be a comedy sketch, but it was just odd.
Yeah.
I think they're fine. God, he got very, in fairness to Dustin, I was looking at him in the press conference. An incredibly vacant disposition.
Oh yeah,
like he really does. Yeah. I'm sure there's more going on there. Of course there is.
But not. I've been out doing him a few times for dinner. Does not.
Oh
yeah.
You've been out with Dustin Johnson for dinner.
Yeah.
With
in the Dunhill, with JP McManus, and a whole lot of others.
You and JP and Dustin and more.
There's plenty there. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. No. In person, he looks like, honestly, someone needs to tell him where he is. You're in France. It's the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
It's
like, wake up there.
It's straight.
He's playing video games behind the.
Honestly,
yeah,
he really does not look with it.
No,
God love him. So you're saying you didn't find him to have loads more going on then?
No.
It's fair enough, really.
I always said, incredibly clever, incredibly stupid to play this game of golf.
Yeah. It's true.
Take your pick.
So finally, British Masters is on. Francesco Molinari, Tommy Fleetwood are the two favourites.
Paul Dunne is
defending champion. Yeah. It's a pretty good feel. Like, Justin Rose is obviously the host.
Yeah.
Matt Fitzpatrick's there. Eddie Pepperell. Shane Lowry's there.
Shane needs a big week.
Does he?
Yeah.
Where is he in life?
He's got his card secure, but to get into the top 60, so he gets to play the Race to Dubai or the final event.
Okay.
But also he needs to try and bump him his way back up into the top 50 in the world.
Well, yeah, sure.
You know?
See, well, okay. You mean he needs a big week in the way he's needed a big week for about a year?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I was very surprised last week to miss the cut. You know, that is his tournament. That's his wheelhouse, as they call it. Mm. You know, the Dunhill, I don't think he's ever, last couple of years, he hasn't finished outside the top 10. You know, he's always done well on that week.
What's the latest on his caddy?
He's gone to one of my ex-caddies who was with me for 4 years, Brian Martin.
Don't know much about Brian.
Yeah, really nice guy.
Irish?
Irish guy from Ardglass.
Right. What age would he be?
Similar age to myself, 44.
Okay.
Very good golfer. Plays off probably four now. Used to play plus two, plus three.
Okay.
Knows how to caddy and says it as it is.
Okay.
So very like Dermot. Was with Shane, so
and they probably would have known each other and been in similar circles down the last number of years. Would they? Brian's been out on tour with.
He caddied for me for 4 years, so yeah, he would have. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good choice.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Very good choice. Yeah.
Well, we'll see how he goes this week. And then the CIMB Classic in Kuala Lumpur has an okay field. I mean, the wraparound season.
Yeah, they play two tournaments outside of America. Or, well, they play three in total, don't they? They go to Malaysia, Korea, and then they play one in Mexico.
Yeah. We're still waiting for, I mean, in a way, it's like we'll take a couple of weeks break, and Hawaii is when it really kick starts, I guess. But
yeah.
Justin Thomas is there. Paul Casey is there. Had a good Ryder Cup.
Money, money, money.
Yeah. Billy Horschel is there. And Louis Westhuizen. And then it goes off a bit of a cliff.
Yeah.
Paul Casey had a good Ryder Cup and was genuinely emotional. Did you see his interview?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really emotional.
Surprise you?
Very.
Did you not think he was into the Ryder Cup before that?
I didn't think he was that emotional type.
Yeah. Well, he seemed quite embarrassed to be emotional. It was almost like, here, ask him a question. I don't want to let myself down here on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely didn't want to cry on TV.
No. It was like that, you know, he finally got back into where he thought he belonged.
Yeah.
And was really emotional about it.
Yeah, it seems to just hit him.
Yeah. Look, he's had it tough over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
He's separated and you know, a few other things happened to him. So, but look, he's back now and, yeah. Sure he's got the wheelbarrow out in Malaysia.
He sure is.
As they call it.
Fill your boots time.
Oh, big time. Oh, especially over there, yeah.
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 Listen, thank you for coming in.
Not at all. My pleasure.
Let's do the get some swings. Just, I mean, record yourself very quickly on Twitter. I think Twitter can handle a 2-minute video. So record yourself. Keep it to 30, 40 seconds. And we might stockpile them.
A few from, just to let the people know, right? So you want from behind and in front.
You'd now, like both.
Okay, so if we're talking about a clock, right?
Yeah.
You're aiming at 12 o'clock, so you want the camera at 3 o'clock and at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, don't be giving you funny angles.
No.
Yeah.
So if the people think about that, so they're hitting at 12, you want the camera at 6 o'clock and 3 o'clock.
Right angles. We all want right angles.
Yeah, so it just gives us a good idea of what's going on.
Okay, well, let's do that. That'd be good fun. And we'll do it as a separate Golf Weekly. It will probably only work as a YouTube video.
Yes.
But sure, what the hell, that's no harm. We can
no.
do that. Okay,
no.
Great. Yeah, because I want to get nerdy about the golf swing.
Okay.
I want to get into it.
It's the winter. It's the time to do it.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Listen, pleasure. Thanks so much for coming in.
Not at all. Thank you.
Starter kid right here.